Okay, today on North State Give and Take and Local Voices, I'm going to interview Jake. And Jake, will you say your last name for me?
Palazzo.
Palazzo. I love it. I don't know if I knew that, but I would have liked it when I heard it.
I think it means palace or large house or something.
I love it. So Italian.
Sicilian.
Ah, Sicilian. Mm-hmm. And you may know Jake from seeing him at Mountain Sports for many years. When did you start?
I think it was the end of 2013.
Okay.
After almost 25 years.
25 years. And so if you would go into Mountain Sports mm-hmm. and you needed information to know something, to know where to hike, to know what shoes to buy, you went for the old guy. The reason I said that is because Steve Scarborough said that the other day too when he was at Collier's. You go for the old guy.
I decided I like my surgeons like I like my bush pilots, you know, and I like a little gray showing.
Exactly. So Jake had worked there, like you said, how many years did you work
there? 24 and a half.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you knew the ins and outs of stuff when it comes to mountain sports, outdoor sports, and you are a sports person that has done a lot in your life. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to talk about some of the things you've done, mm-hmm. A little bit about, you know, how you're here, you know, how long you've been here, and mm-hmm. Some of the things you've done.
Okay. All right.
Go for it.
I showed up in Chico in the fall of 1989 after, like a lot of guys in Chico, I met a woman in Chico who became my wife, and of now 34 years we've been together, Marty Dunlap. And I had worked for 10 years in an outdoor store in my hometown of Santa Cruz, another family-owned store. And before I came up to Chico, I arranged to go to work for Mountain Sports for Bruce Hart at Mountain Sports, and which had been there since the mid-70s. And it's now nearly 50 years old, this business. And Bruce has had it for 49, I think, of those. Mm-hmm. It's become iconic.
And, it has.
Yeah. And our store specialized in mountaineering equipment and backpacking equipment and fine clothing for both outerwear and sportswear. And we even carried dresses for women. We carried really nice clothes. And
yeah. And so skiing and all of those things, backpacking. Mm-hmm. I've gone in there a number of times looking for funny little plastic things that are lightweight that I can carry places. And I say, Jake, which one's the best? And then, and great clothing. You're right. Uh-huh.
We probably carried 20 or 30 lines of clothing, and as well as a lot of footwear.
Yeah.
From rock climbing shoes and cross-country shoes, specialized gear like that, to boots and running shoes, mm-hmm. trail running shoes, that sort of thing. And the sandals, flip-flops. Yeah, we carried a lot of that stuff. And I think we carried something like $100,000 in footwear. I mean, it was a lot. And
then yeah.
One of the last successful independently owned
right.
mountaineering stores in California.
Right. So. Well, and when you talk about footwear, mm-hmm. you were kind of a specialty guy in the footwear department.
Well, after 20 some years of it, I kind of became a guru on that stuff, and unfitting shoes and doing specialty stuff, stretching shoes out for mm-hmm. people and measuring people and taking records of people's feet, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know the shape of each shoe I sold and every boot I sold, and to see which ones would fit which ones mm-hmm. people's feet. And so mm-hmm. I tend to specialize yeah. people with problems.
Yeah. And you could tell when I came in there and spoke mm-hmm. to you, I felt very confident, and mm-hmm. I knew that you were going to guide me in a way that yeah. I needed to be guided because yeah. I didn't know what I was doing. So
yeah.
I always appreciated that. But even before that, you are a sports guy. You're an outdoor sports guy.
You know, I've been blessed in that my vocation and my avocation have been one and the same. So on my days off, I would always spend time in the outdoors. And of course, you use outdoor equipment in the outdoors a lot. So I learned about the equipment, what worked, what didn't work, and why. And ended up designing equipment over the years for different manufacturers, helping doing consulting work, mm-hmm. and teaching courses on outdoor stuff, acting as backcountry travel agent and sending people
yeah.
out on trips and that sort of thing. It was always fun. Yeah, and I was very, very fortunate.
Yeah. And like you said, guiding people. I've got two kids. I want to walk 2 miles. Where do I want to go for this hike?
I used to get those kind of requests all the time.
I knew that.
And it's like, I just want to go a quarter mile. And it has to have perfect camping and no mosquitoes. And it has to be by a lake. And it's like, I would tell people, you've died and gone to heaven if you find that place.
Got it. Yeah. But people want to know those kind of things. And sure. You could guide them.
Yeah. When you have firsthand information, not just from my own adventures, but also you get to hear about certain places and intimate details about certain places from my customers. At any given time of year, some locations that might be wonderful at one time of year may be horrible at another time of year because of weather or bugs or whatever. And,
yeah.
And so you have to warn people about those sorts of things. And
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
So some of the sports that I know you know about are and that I've always been kind of interested in is snowshoeing.
Uh-huh.
All that skiing stuff that you did. So you've got a whole winter bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got backpacking and river rafting.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't you big river rafter guy?
Well, my wife and I have been paddling for, you know, 30 or 40 years, many, many years. But our store didn't sell that type of equipment. The our store, the other sports you mentioned, though, we did carry quite a bit of cross-country ski and telemark ski equipment and backpacking equipment. And but yeah, I like just about almost any human-powered activity in the outdoors. and I did hundreds and hundreds of trips in my 20s and 30s and 40s. And it was it's always the misadventures that you remember.
Yeah, isn't that true? Isn't that true?
It's true.
It's true. Yeah. So I know you've covered a lot of rivers in your life.
Yes.
And taken many people on trips.
I met my wife on a river trip.
There you go. And that you were the person that kind of did the trip and did the cooking and just sort of took care of everybody's needs.
Yeah. We always have a saying with our friends that have never been on a multi-day whitewater rafting trip. It's the most fun you can have with your clothes on, but it's not necessarily a prerequisite. But yeah, it's a pretty fairly leisurely trip, though it's very exciting. And I discovered over the years that my wife and I both have the same, what we refer to as wimp factor.
Perfect. That works good if you're a couple.
What we're willing to do in terms of risking life and limb.
Yeah. Know. Well, that's good. Yeah. That's a good combo. And you both are doing some kayaking now?
We still do. Yeah, actually, yeah. We still own probably more than a dozen boats and kayaks and canoes. And so, yeah, we do a fair amount of boating. And,
still.
Still on the Sacramento River and up in the lakes of the Sierras. That sort of thing.
Places
and,
like
more
that.
Flat water stuff these days.
Yeah.
But we have an old dog, so.
Yeah. She tells you what you're going to do next.
Exactly.
That's good. Yeah. And then also, you're sort of connected up there in the foothills. You've got a place in...
In Plumas County, yeah.
Yeah.
And we Yeah, so we spend probably at least a quarter of our time up there.
Nice.
So it's almost like being ishi in two worlds. We have our community up there and our community down
here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Sometimes the friends cross over, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's one of the perks of retirement. And
it's true. It's true. And we've been there. We've crossed over and loved coming up. And that's kind of, you get a little bit of your boating up there, I'm sure, and your hiking and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we actually specifically bought a cabin up above the 3,300 foot level so that we would avoid poison oak, which I get terribly.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
And oh, now poison oak for you is not good as an outdoor guy.
Not at all.
And yeah.
I used to get covered with it doing trail work. When I lived in Santa Cruz, I would do trail work down in Big Sur in the Ventana Wilderness, and I would just get covered.
Yeah.
With my friends.
Well, and when you get covered and it's serious, it's actually quite a problem.
Yeah, it is.
I understand that.
You just have to get shots and such.
Okay, I get that. Yeah. All right, so now, as you said, you are retired, and you're doing a little bit of boating and that kind of stuff around.
Mm-hmm.
What else are you doing?
Oh, boy. Definitely our outdoor adventures are much more pedestrian these days than they used to be, and... Because we're both because of our aging bodies and our aging dog. And I'm trying to keep up both of our houses. We're caring for some elderly individuals that we've gotten.
You've inherited.
Assisted living that we've inherited that have no family. Mm-hmm. So just different things like that.
Yeah.
I thought I would have more time when I retired, but we had a lot of deferred maintenance on both our bodies and our homes.
Yeah.
And
I like that deferred maintenance on our bodies. I think that might be aging.
Sometimes it feels like, I feel like the Dutch boy with his finger in the dike trying to repair things as fast as they break. But
I know. I get it. And do you have some contact with some young people out there doing things?
And Yeah, I do have some. With some, the occasionally I'll drop by the Mountain Sports and the young folks that are working in the store there and hear about some of their adventures. It's kind of neat. And and my, of course, nieces and nephews, and I know a number of young people still doing things. And I do miss being out of the loop at the store where you're hearing on a daily basis what's going on and how conditions are at various areas and such.
Sure.
But and one of the things about working in an outdoor store is you almost immediately get a certain level of respect from the public, that which is very ego-stroking, but it also, I'm not sure if it's always deserved for me, but I was never very hardcore, and though a lot of people immediately think you are when you work in a store like that, I was probably hardcore in the respect that I did a lot of wilderness trips, and but I was never a particularly athletic person in terms of rock climbing or skiing.
Kind of
I was never an expert at those things in terms of athleticism.
Yeah.
Though I knew a lot about them because I studied them
sure.
religiously. I knew a lot about the equipment and I knew a lot about the techniques involved.
Yeah.
And I became an expert on knots, for instance, you know, that kind of thing. And those certain things that you learn working in a store like that, like with rope, we sold bulk cordage and rope. You learn from how to tie a bowline from a sailor, a cowboy, a tree worker, and all the different, a rock climber, all the different people that show you how to do the same knot.
Yeah.
They all do it differently. And as an example, I mean, really, it's interesting, all the different groups that you do meet. I got really involved in my 20s after being rescued in Yosemite from a dislocated shoulder skiing out across from Yosemite, from El Capitan, outside of Yosemite Valley. I got really into rescue work. And I ended up becoming certified in avalanche work, and I became a Swiftwater rescue person and taught it a little bit with Bill Davis and Matt Wallen here in Chico, and for Cal Fire and others. And just different things that you learn over the years, all the techniques. Many of your friends end up being guides when you work in an outdoor store that you do trips with. And while I never got into that world, you learn a lot of techniques and improvisational skills and from guides and in all these different fields, and snow and white water and flat water and hiking wilderness trips.
And you did some, training of people, classes of that. Quite a bit.
Quite a bit, actually. Ranging from innumerable scout troops and church groups to and low flight care under Marty Marshall, and did wilderness survival classes for him.
Neat.
And I remember doing classes for PG&E on wilderness survival, many, many different groups. And I remember putting together a 10-question questionnaire with answers on the back so people could test themselves. I remember doing this for Endless Flight Care on their wilderness survival IQ. And one of the questions that I remember distinctly, because a lot of people do seem to have a unreasonable fear of wild animals. And this question was, as an adult in California, do you have a greater likelihood or greater chance of being killed by a mountain lion as an adult, or winning the big spin in the state lottery? And I had done quite a bit of research on this, and you have a 14 times greater chance of winning the big spin. So it was always interesting doing some of those classes.
I bet you were fun.
Yeah.
I bet you were fun for people.
I used to always talk about in a lot of the wilderness survival classes, the survival law of threes. And there's actually two survival laws of threes. One is, of course, that three of anything is a universal distress signal. Three shots, three fires, that sort of thing. But the other survival law of threes that would always be a hit with these crowds was explaining that you could survive about 3 minutes without air, and about 3 hours without warmth, and about 3 days without water, and about 3 weeks without food, and about 3 months without internet access or sex.
They all catch up at that point. But that's good. All that other stuff is pretty good information to know. You're listening to an interview with Jake Palazzo on KZFR 90.1 FM. This is North State Local Voices, and stay tuned for more of it after a break. back to this pre-recorded interview with Jake Palazzo. You're listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico. My name's Bobby Tryon.
I'm always very impressed by the people who teach native skills classes. And there's some around here that do that, that are very good. And those are really interesting. I've done a few of those over the years, but it's time consuming and very labor intensive. And how to do bow drills and build fires.
All these things with nothing.
Brain tanning and all that stuff. There's all kinds of skills and how to make cordage. And it's pretty fascinating doing that stuff. And when you can learn how to live that much of a minimalist in the wilderness, you really...
You've learned something.
Yeah, you really do learn something.
Yeah. And for kids, I mean, you know, when you get a little older, you kind of, you know, your time is this way and that. But when you're younger, that's the great stuff for kids.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To get them aware, awareness.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I always appreciated was just the backpacking aspect. Like, you know, first of all, knowing, of course, the maps and where to go. But, you know, sort of guiding people. No, you don't need to carry that. Be aware of your weight because you may want to take it, but don't.
Yeah, a lot of that is teaching people guidelines, you know, or you know, estimates of how much they should or shouldn't take with them. And nothing is sadder than running into someone on the trail with 80 pounds of ultralight equipment on them.
Yes. Right.
And as we've gotten older, you know, and the industry has matured, modern equipment has gotten so light. I remember the last few years I worked in the store, the last 5 or 6 years, I had our employees put together a list of everything you would take with you except food and water and what you wore on your person, everything in your backpack. And to see traditional equipment was around 23 to 25 pounds without food and water with your all your shelter and your stove and all that stuff and rain gear. And the last year I was there, it was under 6.5 pounds.
Wow.
And the people doing the ultralight thing, a lot of them are doing long distance hiking like the Pacific Crest Trail and the John Muir Trail and that sort of thing. Or they're our age, you know, they're older.
Yeah.
They can't carry a third of their body weight anymore comfortably. And,
right.
So really interesting how the industry has changed that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, that type of equipment is usually not going to be quite as comfortable or quite as convenient to use or quite as long lasting as traditional equipment.
Yeah.
But it's much lighter.
Yeah. You can go.
And
I remember as a backpacker, that was one of the things. The last of the trip, I was loving it because I'd eaten all my stuff and it was light.
One of the things that I taught that I really enjoyed was outdoor cooking. And I taught that at UC Santa Cruz when I was in my hometown of Santa Cruz and when I ran the outdoor store there. And I taught it here for a number of different groups. And one of my most memorable classes was teaching for Mark and Tanya Dale of Paradise, had kids in a venturing crew, which is a co-ed thing sponsored by the Boy Scouts and a small co-ed crew. And these were really active kids. And they had a cooking competition. And they divided up into four person teams, and they wanted me to judge the competition, and they were incredible. And I thought, oh, this is going to be real easy. They had it broken down into, you know, fats and carbohydrates and proteins, how much it cost, how many ounces of fuel it took, how long it took to cook each of these things, how many calories. I mean, it was just remarkable, and they were all wonderful, if not spectacular. I'll never forget that. It was such an honor to do it. And I love that. And I worked a lot with Troop 2, the Boy Scout troop here in Chico years ago, and with many of the parents and kids teaching snow camping classes.
Uh-huh.
I did a lot of snow camping when I was younger. And I used to teach it for the Sierra Club in the Bay Area. And that was always really fun, too. You know, building snow caves and you know, igloos and all that stuff. That was fun.
Yeah. Well, and when you say cooking, that was always my favorite part of every, of course, it was the end of the day and I'd already done my walk, but I loved all the funny little things that you could do.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I used to always carry cabbage.
Uh-huh.
Because you could cook it.
you could
put it on a sandwich.
Uh-huh.
You could do anything with it. You know?
Everybody's got their favorite ingredient. I've seen like that they take with them on the backcountry.
Yeah.
Cabbage is a good one. Carrots are good.
Yeah.
Cucumber is real popular.
Yeah.
And certain things. And it's so funny.
I know.
One of the cooking series I used to do in Santa Cruz was up at the Henry Cowell State Park for the state park sponsored a native skills series of classes, and they had me do the cooking stuff for them, and I did an outdoor cooking class, and one of the nights we did was cooking with fire, and that was a blast.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of crazy stuff, like stacking Dutch ovens and cooking with Dutch
ovens.
Or building, you ever heard of a dingle fire? A dingle fire roaster, which is a thing with a little fan blade on the top of a chain that turns your whatever you're cooking by the fumes coming off the fire. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. I remember my brother teaching me how to use a folding hamburger cooker basket to make 15 s'mores at the same time.
Crazy. Yeah, we all get crazy. And I always had a little, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a little stove,
uh-huh.
and you used wood. And what did you call it?
That one actually, yeah.
Oh, I remember the name of that stove. It was a Zip stove.
That's right. A Zip stove. That's
yep.
right. That's exactly right.
Yep.
And,
those are good.
Yeah. I also have, and I might have it in the garage still here, a Kelly kettle, which is, I think, from Ireland, which is a milk jug, a tall, slender milk jug with a wide mouth on the side, and had a chimney up the middle of it. And
interesting. So it drew the...
Yeah, yeah, you had a little pan that you made a twiggy fire in, and you put this thing right on top of it, and so it heated it from the inside.
Great.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, some of those things.
It is, definitely.
The only thing with the Zip stoves is you had to... it turned your pots black.
Sometimes oh, yes, it did.
So it helped to soap up the outside of your pots.
Yes, it did. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a set that only went backpacking.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
There's a number of those that have been out over the years, different types. Some of them don't use fans at all. They use like a chimney type arrangement. And I've had a few different ones.
Yeah, it works so good. And at the towards the end of the day, mm-hmm. we'd gather some twigs as we went. And I mean, you cook rice, you could do anything with them as long as, you know, it was mm-hmm. such a good way to go.
One of the more adventurous cooking experiences I've had is I got, when we bought a cabin in Plumas County 18 years ago, they used to have there for many years, it was a couple out of Quincy from Black Hawk Solar, and Billy and Mel Rocket that sponsored the solar cook-off up in Taylorsville.
Oh, I'd been to that.
Yeah. And so I went to it a number of years, and the first time I was in awe and at the people that made improvised things. It was incredible.
They did,
And since then, I got way into it and became one of the 70 or so solar nerds that would cook for the 2,000 people up there and with a solar oven. And I, to this day, I still cook quite a bit with a solar oven.
Really?
And I've taught it at the farmer's market for Earth Day with mm-hmm. Todd Harris and showing... you know, how to build them and as well as how to cook mm-hmm. with them. And that's been really fun. I was just amazed at some of the stuff that they did.
The people come up with.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the solar cook-off is no more. After 21 or 2 years, they finally gave it up. Mm-hmm. But it was a fun event. It was a craft fair.
Yeah, I remember it too.
And, but all the solar cook-off stuff was really interesting.
Yeah.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. All these different tricks.
Cooking. Well, and I just feel as though you're, you know, this interview doesn't do you justice. I know you're going to say that, but of what you know and what you've done in that whole arena of the outdoors, it's just it's remarkable. You know, each time we came up with something, you said, "Oh yeah, I did that. Oh yeah."
Well, you always say that experience is what they call it right after you needed it.
That's good.
It's true.
That's good. That's good. But I mean, it takes doing it to get it. And, you know, I just appreciate how much you've done. And, you know, it was so good, like I said, to find you at Mountain Sports and to go, I'm going to go talk to Jake. He'll know what to do.
In our industry, they refer to people like me as a techno weenie.
Well, that's okay. We'll take that. Well, Jake, thanks so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I know.
Pleasure.
I know, you're so funny. You said, who wants to listen to me? I said, oh, I will. Anyway, that's great. Thanks, Jake.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye. You've been listening to a pre-recorded interview with Jake Palazzo, who used to work at Mountain Sports and continues to be one of our local voices. And if you'd like to be on North State Local Voices, please give me a call or a text to 530-520-1593. You can hear any of these interviews by going to kzfr.org, going to programs, and going to Tuesdays, and all of them are archived there. You can hear them at 6 o'clock on Tuesday and at 5 o'clock on Thursday. So stay tuned to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico. My name's Bobby Tryon. Thanks for listening. Thank you.